What is up, you guys? Thank you so much for tuning in. Our team's been working super hard behind the scenes the last 4 months to bring you something, and I'm super excited to announce it. We are officially launching the Way Forward membership platform. And you're probably thinking, oh my God, not another membership platform with what? Exclusive podcasts? Well, yes, actually, exclusive podcasts. That's one piece of it. And for $17 a month or $150 annually, you'll get exclusive podcasts, courses, workshops, weekly community calls, and Q&As with leaders in multiple areas. Past, present, and future in-person and live stream event footage for free. Live breathwork sessions, Kundalini yoga sessions, and meditations. Articles, PDFs, and other resources. Exclusive discounts with brands like Soma Vedic, Defender Shield, Herbal Infusions, and Food Over Drugs. Source, our freedom-oriented and holistic health-oriented business directory. And exclusive content from Don Lester and David Parker, Molly Engelhart, Brandon Bozarth, Garrett Kramer, myself, and so much more. And that's just phase one of our membership. Phase two will have even more than that. And lastly, your contributions help to ensure that we're able to even get to a phase two and help to ensure that myself and our team at The Way Forward are able to continue doing what we do to educate and empower you. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope to see you as part of The Way Forward membership. Welcome back to another episode of The Way Forward podcast. This episode, I was supposed to publish a discussion that I had with Amanda Vollmer regarding RSV and all the craziness surrounding the latest germ scare, as well as our opinion of the documentary Died Suddenly. And we did have that discussion, but because she gave a PowerPoint presentation, as well as her audio was cutting out a few times, it's just much better to follow along with that on video. Didn't really make sense to publish it on audio. So I'll link that in the show notes if you want to listen to that. Highly recommend watching it so you can learn all about RSV and the truth about it, especially from the lens that there actually is no proof whatsoever that strictly adheres to the scientific method or to logic that any of these so-called viruses, these submicroscopic pathogenic particles, exist. And then we also, like I said, gave our perspective on the documentary Died Suddenly, and we share similar perceptions on it, and I highly recommend checking that out. That's towards the tail end of it, I believe, at 1 hour and 5 minutes in. Again, that'll be in the show notes. So this podcast episode, in place of the Amanda Vollmer episode, will be a discussion that I just finished up with my friend Brad Miller, who resigned his commission in the U.S. Army because of the mandates. And if you're a civilian, or I don't even want to say civilian, if you're a man or woman that is not currently in or never has been in the Army, I still highly recommend sticking around for this episode, because the moral courage that this man has displayed over the past 2.5 years, and especially in the last few months, is something that anyone could benefit from hearing about. So highly recommend sticking around for this. It was an incredible discussion. Really takes a lot of balls, for lack of a better term, to do what Brad has done in the manner that he's done, especially considering all that he had to lose. And it is a perfect example of choosing the harder right over the easier wrong, which is something that we were taught at West Point. That's in the West Point Cadet Prayer. And despite being taught that, overwhelmingly, Army officers and other members of the government are doing the exact opposite of that with everything that's happened in the last 2.5 years and what will continue to happen. So really awesome discussion we had. And then the last thing I'll share, and I'll start doing this on every episode, is our calendar of events that we have coming up, doing a live podcast on YouTube and Unite. And again, you'll be able to find those at the link in the show notes with Stephanie Siniff. We'll probably be discussing glyphosate, mRNA shots, connections between glyphosate and other adjuvants in shots on the childhood schedule. And then also a live podcast on the 7th of December. Sorry, that last one will be on the 30th of November, the one with Stephanie Smith. And then on the 7th of December will be a live podcast with Vinnie Tolman, who died. He was pronounced dead and literally zipped up in a body bag and experienced the afterlife and was then subsequently revived and shares his story. It's an incredible story that makes you really recenter yourself and value and cherish life, which we should all be doing, right? So that'll be an incredible discussion. And then for members, for the Way Forward members, we will have a Q&A with Vinny on the 22nd of December. And we also have a podcast episode coming up on the 14th of December, live on YouTube with Eileen McCusick discussing biofield tuning. And then we'll do a live biofield tuning session for our members, for the Way Forward members on the 5th of January. And then lastly, a podcast episode live on the 21st with Dr. Melissa Sell discussing German New Medicine. And then a members only Q&A with Melissa on the 6th of January. We also have some Kundalini yoga sessions on the 5th of December and the 21st of December for our members. And then a breathwork session on the 12th of December for our members. So be sure to check out our membership. Again, that'll be in the show notes, or go to thewayforward.com/membership to check that out. We have so many things that we're offering, so many things that we're working on behind the scenes with our membership. And of course, if you have a freedom-oriented or holistic health-oriented business that you'd like to add to our business directory for free, please do so at thewayforward.com. You can find our business directory there. Really hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you again for tuning in. If you like what we do at The Way Forward and like the work that I'm doing, please consider becoming a member. And also, please share this with your friends and family, because that is how we continue to spread our message in the face of this ridiculous censorship that we've been dealing with over the past 2.5 years and beyond. And when I say censorship that we're dealing with, I mean, we are really experiencing it here. Anyone who's been following my work knows how censored I am. So if you appreciate this episode or any of our other episodes, please share it with your friends and family. Thank you again for tuning in. Hope you enjoy the episode. It's no secret that I come from a military background, right? So am I more inclined to interview people who were also once in the military that are awake to what's going on in the world? Absolutely, I am. So for those who are frustrated by me interviewing another former Army officer, I'm sorry. He's also a West Point graduate like myself. So I have it's a special place in my heart that I hold for service members who are awake, especially if they're officers that were West Point graduates, because as we were talking before we started recording, the overwhelming majority of Army officers are doing the exact opposite, ironically, of what we are taught as Army officers. And that could go in several directions. Obeying unlawful orders, obeying unethical orders, not doing individual or unit level risk benefit analyses, choosing the easier wrong over the harder right. And that's not an Army specific thing, but that is in the West Point cadet prayer, choosing the harder right over the easier wrong. And overwhelmingly, officers and service members and leadership in the Department of Defense are doing the exact opposite of that. So I had to interview you, especially because we've talked before and I have a good understanding of where you're coming from and the research that you've done. And knowing that you resigned your commission 9 months before you could have retired and had all of the benefits that come with retirement. I mean, everyone who's served in the military, even people who disagree with what the military does, if they're like, 6 years away from retirement, they're just like, screw it, dude. I'll stick it out for another 6 years. Just do what I'm told so that I can get to retirement. You were 9 months away and you had the moral courage to do the right thing, choose the harder right over the easier wrong. So I had to interview. So let's start with a background of where you're coming from and how you saw through the COVID narrative as soon as it began.
Yeah. Okay, great. All right. So, yep, Brad Miller. I grew up in North Carolina, went to school at West Point, graduated in 2003. My last official day in the Army was September 15th of this year, so just 2 months ago. So that gave me a total amount of service of 19 years, 3 months, and 15 days. And so just to give the full picture as to what was going on and why I got out when I did, because I don't want anybody to ever accuse me of not telling the whole story. So I resigned. That is 100% accurate. Prior to that, though, I had been relieved of command. So I mean, there were some things that and anybody who's
a battalion command, correct?
As a battalion commander. Yeah, and we can certainly go through that. I just want people to know that they're everything didn't happen just at once. I got relieved of command for refusing to go through with the mandate. I'm sure we can speak more about that. And then a couple of months later, there was a directive from Army headquarters that was pushed out, which it was on January 31st of this year, so 2022. So I had already been relieved. I was relieved in October of 2021. So the directive said, we, the Army, are going to have a fully vaccinated force by July 1st, 2022. If you're not vaccinated and you're not still going through the administrative process of some exemption, you're going to be separated. So in lieu of being separated, I chose to resign. Now, I'm sure I could have stalled. There were plenty of people who said, just find a way to stall. And I never did that. I was like, no, I'm completely good with resigning. I'm fully aware of what I'm giving up. You don't have to preach to me about it. I'm clear-eyed in my assessment as to what's going on. And the other thing is that, I was a hard refusal. So I never put in for a religious accommodation request. And I'll happily explain why. I understand that I may see this differently than some other people. So do I have religious objections to the COVID-19 injections? Yes, I do. I have very, very strong ones. So the fact that I did not apply for an accommodation request is not because I don't have religious objections, but in my mind, and this is just me, this is my perspective. Mm-hmm. When you request a religious accommodation, it's almost like you're already conceding that the shots perhaps are safe or effective. You just have some sort of religious objection, typically about either the research or the development that went into the production of the injections. I'm not willing to concede that they're safe, you know,
or effective, or that it's lawful, or they work at all.
I question the entire narrative that got us to the injections. So in my mind, and this is just Brad Miller speaking, I don't want to speak for other people who are very well-intentioned and have put in religious accommodations.
Because it's totally understandable to do that too. Like before I got out of the Army, I had a religious accommodation as well. Especially because it's like,
yep.
For those who are unaware of, you know, the law, 21 U.S. Code 360 BBB-3, 10 U.S. Code 1107 Alpha. There's multiple things like codes and statutes federally that uphold service members' right. But a lot of people are unaware of that because, of course, the Department of Defense is not going to do their job to educate service members on the law, especially when they're not planning to adhere to it.
Well, 100%, 100%. So, I was a hard refusal, so I did not necessarily have an easy mechanism to stall. Though I'm sure I could have found other ways to stall if I had really wanted to get to 20 years. I was completely good with walking away, you know, and here we are. So, one thing that you mentioned that I do want to touch on before I forget is you mentioned the cadet prayer. That's one of those things that you learn at the very beginning when you're at West Point. Choose the, you don't look at what's easy. You don't look at the path of least resistance. When you look at doing what's right and doing what's wrong, and one's hard and one's easy, it doesn't matter. You choose the harder right over the easy or wrong. So, and you said, ironically, what's going on is we have a lot of individuals in the Army and across DOD who are doing the exact opposite. I 100% agree. And I think that there's a paradox at play here, right? And the way I look at it, the way I kind of explain this in my own head, the way I've kind of debated this just internally with myself is I felt like there was a moment where, I understand this doesn't quite make sense on its face, it's a paradox, but I had to either choose the Army or I kind of had to choose the country because I felt like the Army was no longer in line with the country. And I felt like DOD was very much acting in their own interests or in the interests of other parties, whatever, but not in the interests of the country. Mm-hmm. And so in a functioning society with a functioning government, your armed forces support the country, you know, and really do preserve freedom, et cetera. That's not where we live. You know, we can argue about when things went awry.
I was just about to ask you, like, your perceptions on, was this sort of a long time coming or is it something that just happened recently?
Long time coming. Yeah. And I'll explain that in a second why I believe that.
That was a rhetorical question for those listening.
Yeah. There's just no way, like, COVID's an op. I mean, there's just no other way around it. And there's no way that we could get to the point where this would be successful without things having happened, you know, over time. I mean, it is what it is. And I think, so let me finish my thought and then I'll kind of explain that too. So in my mind, there was a paradox at play. I can either remain in uniform, you know, express my loyalty to the armed forces, or I can go with the country. And in my mind, you know, there's an order of precedence here. You can't you can't choose the military over the country because the military exists to support the country, not the other way around, you know? And so, you know, there's a term that I believe has been co-opted, like so many words in our lexicon these days. But when you say you're a patriot, people interpret that in many different ways. I interpret it the way that Mark Twain uses the term, where he says, you know, patriotism means you love, you support your country always, you support your government when it deserves it. And I don't think our government deserves it, and it hasn't deserved it in a very, 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 very long time. So my path as to how I got to where I am now, it didn't start in 2022. It didn't start in 2020, you know, with COVID, whatever. It started prior to that. It probably started in about 2007. And this was when, so I was a captain. If you want to go back further, so I was in my third year, what we affectionately refer to as Cal year at West Point, right?
Yeah, junior year for those.
Junior year. So I was in, I had just started my junior year at West Point when 9/11 occurred. So, you know, we would have been, I guess, roughly a month into the academic year, right? And I can remember very clearly where I was in my room, and my roommate's watching the news on TV, and he tells me, like, you know, a plane just flew. I mean, everybody remembers kind of where they were when this happened, right? And so he tells me, he's watching the news, and hey, there's this plane, you know, flew in the World Trade Center. And then, you know, half an hour later, okay, there's a second plane, you know, that flew in. I mean, I can remember all that happening. So, that experience very much colored my final 2 years at West Point. And I would say that West Point changed on a dime. It was a different place after 9/11. And, you know, I mean, that's probably correct. I mean, at that point, it was pretty clear that cadets were probably going to go to war. And of course, that happened. And, you know, almost all my classmates, of course, deployed probably multiple times throughout their Army career.
How many times did you deploy?
I only deployed twice to Afghanistan. So I had two deployments to Afghanistan. And then I had some other...
Were you on like rotational deployments, like with heavy units?
So I did, it's kind of considered to be like an operational deployment, but it's definitely not a combat deployment. But I spent a year in Honduras. And then of course I was stationed in South Korea for 3 years. So I spent a lot of time overseas. Only two of those were combat deployments to Afghanistan. And I was with the 10th Mountain Division both times. So I was in the 10th Mountain Division at Fort Drum, New York as a lieutenant, and then again as a major. And so that's when my two deployments to Afghanistan occurred. So I deployed to Afghanistan from early 2006 to early 2007. And I deployed. So I was fully on board with the narrative. You know, I was a patriotic American. I would have told you I was a Republican in those days. And I deployed to Afghanistan really thinking that I was fighting terrorists for God and country. Mm-hmm. And then I thought that while I was in Afghanistan, and I came home still thinking that. It's not like I was in Afghanistan and I had some sort of experience which changed my perspective. That did not happen. I guess that'd be cool if, you know, my life were a movie and that's the way it happened. Yeah. It did not happen that way. I came home and my thoughts and perspectives were the exact same as they were before I left. But several months later, nothing to do with the deployment, but I just started doing more research and that just never ended. So I just started doing a lot of research. I realized that we had been entirely lied to about 9/11. It just is what it is. I'm sure you have viewers. I mean, you probably have a pretty smart viewership, but if you have
literally viewers, I would say 99% of my viewership knows that 9/11 was an inside job, or at least the official story is complete nonsense.
Sure. So for the one guy out there that doesn't know that, I mean, I'm sorry, but it's in my mind, and I hate to be pedantic towards people, but if you still believe the narrative about 9/11, like, go sit in the corner with a dunce hat on your head. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And I still would say to this day, if you are a reasonable person with reasonable critical thinking faculties, right? If you do 1 hour of true research with an open mind, I'm not saying you'll come away with all the answers, but 1 hour of true research into 9/11, and you will have disabused yourself of at least the notion that the narrative is true. You're not going to understand everything in 1 hour, but my point is that the narrative is so flimsy that the most cursory level of research into it will cause a narrative to crack if you are an open-minded, reasonable human being.
Yep. If you're not blindly adhering to what authority figures and experts and officials say on something,
100%. Right? Like
that's such a big piece here.
And you've got to get past that. There's going to be a moment, and people have to be willing to address this. And it happened to me. There's going to be a moment where you almost have like a, and I'm not overstating this. I'm not being hyperbolic, but there's a psychologically existential moment where you have to kind of realize the worldview that I have adhered to for X number of years, right, is no longer adequate to explain the world as it actually works. Amen. And I have been wrong. And now I've got to figure out how to refine my worldview. Otherwise, I will never understand what I'm looking at. You know, my map that I'm using to guide myself through life will never match the terrain, you know? So for those who critique people like us and they think we're closed-minded, it's the exact opposite, because there was a moment where we had to admit that our worldview was wrong, or was at least woefully inadequate. So I would say I'm actually a very open-minded person, but when you come to me and you've done no research and you have no idea what you're talking about, and you try to engage in a discussion with me, if I shut you down, it's not that I'm being closed-minded. It's that you don't know what you're talking about. There are plenty of people that I talk to that, and a lot of them are really smart people and they're very well educated, and they just have no idea how the world really works, you know? And that's sad,
so you find that a lot, right? Like amongst this situation with the Department of Defense, as it pertains to COVID, not even touching on the 9/11 piece, but just this last 2.5 years,
sure,
you've already gone through that process to sort of dissolve your worldview and align with what is, right?
Yep.
And when this whole charade struck at the beginning of 2020, did you kind of explained to me already, you saw through it from the very beginning, right? And then when you would try to sort of communicate with people around you, because they hadn't gone through the process of, you know, dissecting their individual worldviews.
Yeah.
You were like, it was like talking to, you know, a brick wall. I mean, that's how it was for me. I'd like to hear your experience on it.
Yeah. But I think I had learned, I didn't really talk about it with my Army friends. I would talk about it with my friends outside the Army. We would talk about it, you know, incessantly. But I guess I had just learned with probably 9/11 or whatever, that there are some conversations you just can't have with your Army friends, because you know, you're going to get yourself in trouble if you start walking around and you can't be deployed to Afghanistan and have conversations with your buddies about how the whole GWAT is predicated on lies, you know? Yeah. I mean, there was a time, probably 2008, 2009, where I almost got out of the Army. And that is because it was
I was going to ask you that, actually. That literally just popped in my head. What made stay
part
in?
Part of the reason, this is totally true, right? Part of the reason that I got out in 2022, short of 20, was because I did not get out in 2009. And what I mean is, I'm not saying that I regret that I have to, you know, have the debate with myself. Well, why, if I knew that the government was lying about, you know, so much stuff, and
not
the entire
behaving, not,
you know,
not, not behaving
terror,
in our best interest, essentially.
Right. Yeah. Why, if I knew this in 2007 and my 5-year commitment from West Point was up in 2008, why didn't I get out of the Army? And I almost did. I almost did, but I couldn't do it. And so I'm not saying that was the right or wrong decision, but I at least questioned to some degree, well, did I not have the courage then to walk away? So then, you know, fast forward 12, 13 years later, when this is happening, the whole COVID op is like 9/11 on steroids. I mean, it is like infinitely larger. And so at this time, it was just, I don't care. I don't care what the consequences are. This is just too much. Perhaps I could tell myself before, I'm waiting for the moment when good people come in and kind of, you know, put the train back on the rails. Now you just realize that that is not going to happen, or at least not the way that many people naively think it's going to happen. You know,
I resonate with that perspective so much. And I'll just share from my own perspective. Prior to COVID, I had already submitted, like I said, before we started recording, a religious accommodation for vaccines. So it was already clear in that wheelhouse. I was aware of 9/11, all the things. And I was looking at going into functional area 51, which is acquisition corps in the U.S. Army. Cause I was like, you know what?
All I heard was area 51. All I heard was area 51.
As I was saying that, I literally thought area 51, yeah. People would be like, wait, what? He's going to go to area
51. They're like, oh man, I knew these two dudes were wackos. Yeah.
No. Okay. So functional area 51 is a special job in the Army, essentially where you're in the acquisition corps. And that involves, in some cases, working with civilian contractors and getting contracts for army projects, essentially with civilian agencies. And so the reason I bring that up is because prior to this whole charade, I was aware of all the same things that you were aware of, but I was like, you know what? As long as I do X, Y, and Z things, and I'm not doing these A, B, and C things, I can justify in my head staying in despite knowing about all the corruption and all these things. As long as I'm not working a combat job, as long as I'm not deployed actively murdering people, I can still justify staying in. And then that's where I've always said, I'm so grateful for this last 2.5 years, because as difficult as it was, it pushed me deeper into my moral convictions and into, you know, introspective work to assess whether my life path was in alignment with what I truly perceived to be the case of what was going on in the world. So I completely understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah. So with this, and this is, you know, like I was saying, this one, there was no way for me to get away from the mandate. And what I'm saying is, even if I try to dodge it for myself through a religious accommodation, I was also a battalion commander, which means now I'm in the middle, and I'm kind of getting pulled in two different directions, because I personally don't want to take the shots, but now I've got hundreds of soldiers and I'm their battalion commander, and this mandate from the Army is an order, but it's going to cascade down. And in some ways, when you're a commander at whatever level, you're the face of that order, you know, for your subordinates that you see. And so this is really interesting. So if we look at it from, we kind of paint the picture through time, right? So I was stationed in Korea. I was there from 2017 to 2020. So when everyone is freaking out at the very beginning of 2020, I'm in Asia, where supposedly, you know, the epicenter is Wuhan, right? Okay, whatever. So a lot of people in Eastern Asia, they are freaking out. And the command in Korea is, you know, taking things very, very seriously, probably a month or two prior to things becoming very, very serious here in the States. And then right around that exact same time period, I am promoted to lieutenant colonel. So my date of rank for lieutenant colonel is 1 February 2020. And so so I get promoted to lieutenant colonel. And then in the summer of 2020, I leave Korea and I come back to the States, and I go to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, to attend what's called SAMS, which is the School of Advanced Military Studies. And so I'm a really senior guy to go to SAMS, because I'm a very newly penned lieutenant colonel. And that is typically a course that is done for majors. But it's a phenomenal course with just phenomenal students. So the fact that I was there as a lieutenant colonel, I mean, I didn't really feel like I was too senior for the course, right? But I'm going to go through SAMS in this year that I have before I'm going to go into command. So when I show up at SAMS at Fort Leavenworth, I'm already on the command list. I know that the following summer, when I graduate from SAMS, I'm going to go into command. And so it's a great way to spend this year kind of reflecting and thinking and looking forward to command. At the same time, though, you know, everybody's wearing masks, and I'd like to tell you that I was super courageous and never wore a mask. It's not true at all. I did wear a mask. Not because I believed in it. I never believed in it, but in my mind, and I'm not saying this is right. I'm just telling you that, that I drew a very definite red line, which was, I'm not taking the shot. But there were other things that I also felt strongly about, but I was just, hey, what's the hill that I'm going to die on? Like, where am I willing to sacrifice my career? And the mask wasn't it. Cause you know, you can take a mask on and off. You can't undo a shot you take. Right. So anyway, there are super courageous people out there that have never put on a mask, you know, once over the last 3 years. And I 100% applaud them. That's not me.
Like Mark Bashaw, Lieutenant Mark Bashaw. He's one of those that,
you know, absolutely. So I'm not going to say that I was there in that fight with him, you know, but hey, you know, all good on him. So, you know, we're wearing a mask the entire year that we're in Fort Leavenworth. And then right about the time that I'm graduating from SAMS, so this is the very end of May 2021, the installations across the Army start to get rid of the mask mandate if you're vaccinated. And so now I'm starting to, you know, I'm walking around the base and I'm like the only one wearing a mask, or at least one of few people who are wearing a mask. So this is the situation or the environment that we're in as I am leaving Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and headed to Fort Campbell, Kentucky to show up and take the colors of my battalion. So I get to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, right around the beginning of June, probably June 1st, give or take a day or two. And then, I'm going to take command of the battalion on June 10th. And so I show up, I'm a lieutenant colonel who's getting ready to take battalion command. I'm wearing a mask. The overwhelming majority of people are not wearing a mask. And so, as you can imagine, there is immediately an us and them. And it's not that people, it's not that anybody says anything to me, but there is a very clear, I mean, it's clear. And I'm well aware that, you know, I'm not on the team. I'm not on the team. Like, I mean, I know in people's heads they're saying, hey, Lieutenant Colonel, soon to be battalion commander, what are you doing? Nobody cares about your personal opinion. Sometimes in the Army, you got to go along with things that you don't personally agree with. Like, this is what I imagine people are saying to themselves in their heads when they see me walking around with a mask. So
this is like the equivalent, except for a more extreme example of the officer that's walking around with a mustache, where it's like, you know what I mean? It's technically in regs, like you're technically allowed to do that, but it's like automatically I'm going to give that dude a mid-level OER.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And for people who think that that's, that those things don't happen, you know, they do. Right. So this is probably the most stressful time in my Army career. This, these first couple of weeks of June 2021, I'm getting ready to take command, or I've just taken command, and I'm starting to realize that I'm not on the team and I don't know what's about to happen. I have 18 years in the Army and I don't know if I'm going to make it through 2 full years in command, which also are the same 2 years that I need to get to 20. Right. Yeah. But I already know that there's me getting further promoted from here, making colonel and going further in my career. That's like out of the question now. It's just whether or not I make it to 20. Well, so I have a conversation with my my brigade commander. So my brigade commander takes command the same time that I take command. So for those who are not super familiar with the Army, the brigade is larger than the battalion. And in a combat brigade, you have 7 battalions in the brigade. So battalions are commanded by lieutenant colonels. Brigade is commanded by a colonel. And I mean, it has significant responsibility. A brigade commander for a brigade combat team, that's like 4,200 soldiers. Yeah. My battalion was about 550, and then if you add in the HHC brigade company, which is administratively part of my battalion, it gets close to 700. Mm-hmm. So I have a conversation with my brigade commander, who's also coming into command, and I tell him, it's actually in an email. I send him an email and I say, hey, you've seen me wearing a mask. I just need to tell you, I'm not vaccinated. Don't plan to take it. I know you're going to get questions as to why I'm wearing a mask. So he sends me an email back. Hey, all good. You're good with me. It's not mandatory. No issues, but you're right. People are going to ask. So just tell me a little bit as to like why you don't want to take it. So I sent him an email back and said, hey, these reasons, blah, 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 blah. And I don't remember exactly what I said in that email. I'm sure I was careful in the way that I presented it. But yeah. Also at this point I was like, it is what it is. I mean, I'm already not on the team.
It's like one of those things where like deep down you're like, dude, they're lying to you. This has nothing whatsoever to do with health.
Yeah.
You have these perceptions, but I totally get that. Cause there's a way, especially when you're still operating in that environment where you have to articulate it very clearly from while putting yourself in their shoes and knowing the lack of understanding and knowledge that they have and the lack of research that they've done, right? Yeah. Being able to articulate your reasons why you're not getting it.
And this guy is, he's a super intelligent guy. When you talk to him, you talk to him for 5 minutes. He's a very, very, very smart guy. Now, he has no clue about this unless he's kind of, woken up in the past year, but I doubt that's happened. He's still in command, but he's a super intelligent guy. He's very reasonable. And I will be honest, I was only in command for 4.5 months. And to me, he was a great brigade commander. Now, I don't think he ever went to bat for me with the division command. I don't think that ever happened. But he was super cool with me about everything. The mask. Well, when I say the mask, I mean just the fact that I was masked and nobody else was. But the whole vaccine thing, he was super cool with me. And as a battalion commander working for him, as a brigade commander, everything just not vaccine related, he was cool. I enjoyed working for him. He was great. So so fast forward a month, and it's now July, right? So the mandate comes out at the end of August, and it's July. And I remember seeing something on the news, and I just realized the writing's on the wall. This mandate is going to come anytime now. And so I approach my brigade commander and I tell him, hey, just so you know, I think we're getting closer and closer to this mandate going into effect. My stance has not changed, just so you know, just so you hear it from me. He just basically said to me, okay, I hope it doesn't come to that. But I think that there was this understanding that he never once tried to talk out of my position, never, and I respect him for that. I have on multiple occasions, I have said that commanders at every level of the military are cowards for what's going on. I stand by that. I know that's a strong word. I don't back away from it. They're cowards.
Even the ones who are, quote, cool, and we're acting cool with you, that's right. If they're not taking a hard stance against this, and I hold the same exact position. Again, even operating within the confines of an authoritative structure where you are obeying the orders of people above you, working within the confines of government, there is still a moral and ethical code that you adhere to. There's still the understanding. And this is in Army doctrine, not to obey unlawful orders, not to obey unethical orders. And these are quite literally, by definition, unlawful and unethical orders.
For sure. So, if I want to look at the situation as charitably as possible, I can perhaps say, hey, 15 months ago when the mandate came out, maybe you didn't realize it was illegal. And maybe you were a true believer and you really thought this was about health and about military readiness. But now, in late November of 2022, there is no way that you can still think that. And so, there are very few things in life that can be reduced down to a binary either or structure, right? But I do believe that either, because we prize our field grade officers or our generals and our admirals on their ability to think strategically. So when you think strategically, what we're looking for is somebody who can survey the environment and make an assessment of, this web or network of all of these diverse interrelated variables, take an assessment of all of that, and then make a determination as to what you got to do, right? Well, why do we have all of these guys then that got all of this completely wrong? So for all these commanders, is it that you don't have the strategic thinking ability that we're paying you for because you can't actually survey the environment and figure out where the real threats are? Or are you kind of aware of what's going on and you're just going to go along with it, mm-hmm. Which means you're a coward. So in my mind, and it is the way that it is, at the very top, I think DOD is completely run by criminals, completely, because they know. They know exactly what's going on. I don't think that, you know, treason is too strong of a word, because I think that they're working against military readiness, and I think they're working against the interests of the nation. And when you look at just the shell game that has happened with the actual FDA approval, I mean, just the whole thing. I mean, it's completely illegal. It's not bad policy. It's not because, you know, there's this prevailing thought in the military, because it's this large bureaucracy, that, hey, sometimes the Army is going to make bad decisions. Yeah. Sure. And sometimes you got to go along with things that you don't necessarily believe in. I understand that too. But there are times in which you have to stand up and you say, this isn't just a bad decision, or this isn't just something that I think just doesn't make sense. This is something that is illegal and is actually working to the detriment, not just of the military, but to the freedoms of the country. I mean, the ideals that our republic was founded upon, right? Yeah. And this goes back to one of the paradoxes that I mentioned early on, which is, if you put me, so in a functioning society, these two would not be in tension, but you put me in a situation where I got to choose the Army or the country. And in my mind, I mean, that's a no-brainer. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. Yeah. And so it's weird that you have this situation where you have people who are wearing, you know, U.S. uniform. They got an American flag on their shoulder, and they may not even necessarily realize it, but they're actually working against the interests of the country. Yeah. And there's another paradox at play too, which is the command paradox. And this is where we got too many people that are too in love with their jobs. So there was a moment where I had to realize that, okay, I'm a battalion commander. I've only been in command for, you know, however many months. It was only 4.5 months total. But if I truly understand the mantle of command, yep, paradoxically, I'm going to have to be willing to give up command, because I'm going to get fired, you know? So you got all these guys who are too in love with the idea of being in command, and being a commander is a big deal in the Army. It is a big deal. We are a commander centric force. That's true. Being a battalion commander is a big deal, because you are chosen by a centralized selection board, you know, at the level of the Army. It's a big deal. And I'm not downplaying it. Right. I understand, but you don't actually understand what it means to be a commander if you're not willing to put yourself in between an illegal order and your soldiers.
100%. And you know what's so sad about that is, not only were commanders unwilling to put themselves to create that barrier that all good commanders do, and when I say all good commanders, in my 5 years that I was on active duty, I only had one battalion commander where I was like, okay, I would have that dude's back for anything, because I know that he actually has mine. Because this is something that's prevalent amongst the Army too, is that commanders will say one thing about, like, ensuring that soldiers have family time, that they're not working late hours, you know, that they have a good work family balance, that they're looking out for their soldiers to ensure that brigade or division or big Army doesn't, you know, push down ridiculous policies that don't make sense. They say that, and then from what I've seen, overwhelmingly commanders do the exact opposite too, where they just suck up to their superiors in order to get a good OER so that they can move up in rank and move their career forward. Do you think that has any play into, you know, what informed all of these commanders doing the exact opposite of what they're intended to do as commanders?
I think, It's a complex question, because I think a lot of people are good people. You know, so this is where, and it's funny, because if you ask me this on a different day, I might actually give you a different opinion. And it's not because I'm inconsistent. It's because this is extremely complex, and at one moment different than another, I might view them slightly more charitably than at another moment in time. I mean, it's admittedly complex. So I think a lot of these people are good people. I do think they're too in love with their jobs. And I do believe that they have told themselves that they are going along with what the organization requires, because they are a team player. And they stop right there, and they don't entertain a deeper thought, because if they were to do so, they probably would not like the conclusions that they would come to. So they just, they don't, I can't look at this too far because I'm afraid I'm going to, you know, see something that I don't want to see. And once I see it, I can't unsee it. Yeah. But there's an element of cowardice there, you know, because I think what happens is, I think now, and again, I will 100% say 15 months ago, there were probably a lot of commanders who were truly duped. You know, they were true believers. They ran out, they got the shots. Sadly, their families probably got the shots, you know, and then, and they thought, hey, this mandate, this is a real legitimate threat, you know, and hey, we really do have to have our soldiers, you know, vaccinated, blah, 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 blah. I just don't think you can tell yourself that anymore with all the data that has come out. Even if you only look at, you know, the mainstream media, which is part of the complex that is lying to you, but still, even if that's the only place you get your news, there is so much information that has kind of started to seep out that you at least have to ask yourself some really hard questions. So what I would like to see is, you know, what would be more devastating than what I'm saying right now, because I was against it from the very beginning, right? But if you had a current battalion commander right now who said, I am resigning. I believed this. I went along with this. I encouraged all my soldiers to get vaccinated before it was mandatory. And then as soon as it became mandatory, I ordered them to go get it because I truly believed in it. And now I realize we were all wrong. If DOD actually cared about health, they would have rescinded this a long time ago. The fact that they haven't, I'm not going to go along with it. Here's my resignation. If you had a couple of commanders at kind of the lieutenant colonel level, you know, in the Navy, that would be commander, captain. If you had a couple of individuals in DOD who did that at kind of that mid command level, that would immediately catch some traction because it would be guys admitting, hey, I was part of the problem. You know,
have you talked to any of your peers that are still in, and have any of them, you know, relayed behind the scenes that they think at the least the Department of Defense is behaving irrationally when it comes to this?
Yeah. And they're my friends, and they're good people. And if they're listening to this, you know, they're going to be pissed off at what I'm going to say, but I mean, they're cowards too, you know? And when I say this, like a coward is just like anything else is a, when I'm saying someone is a coward, I'm not saying they're a coward from this point, you know, forever. I mean, I'm saying you're a coward right now. Moment. We've all been there. Yeah. I'm not telling you that I was Mr. Perfect my whole career I'm 43 years old. I've done a lot of things in my life that, you know, I was either that coward or that person who, you know, didn't do the right thing. We've all been there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm right in this situation. I'm not saying that I had a perfect career. I was always great or whatever. So what I would say to those individuals, and I have had some friends who have told me, so I have multiple friends who are great, great guys, and they're in command positions right now. And they have told me that these are guys who probably would have very long careers in the military if they chose to stick around. I mean, they could easily be, maybe not easily, but I would not be surprised if they were generals, you know? So, and they have told me, hey, I'm going to get out. I'm gonna retire. And the way that I've interpreted that is, and from other things that they've told me, I don't like the way that things are headed. Yeah. And on the one hand, I can respect that, but you know what I would respect a whole lot more? if you stood up right now and said, I can't go along with this. Waiting, and I mean, I know it sucks. It sucks. And I'm not married, I don't have kids, so I understand, you know, you're worried about this. If you're 18 or 19 years in and part of your plan has been a retirement pension that you're entitled to because you were told your whole career you would get it, I understand that. I understand that that's part of the calculus when you're going to make a decision like that, but what are you giving up? And I've made a statement before, and maybe it sounds cheesy, but I 100% believe it, you know, and that is, I'm not naive. I mean, I knew what I was giving up. I knew I was going to give up my command, my career, and my retirement. I knew all that.
Just to paint the picture for everyone listening to this, he was 9 months. Brad was 9 months away from retiring and having all of those benefits that so many people in the military, you know, again, go against their own moral position to stay in because they're just like, screw it. I just want to get to 20 years so I can retire. He was 9 months away and he had the moral courage to, you know, choose the harder right over the easier wrong. And just as another quick thing to share is in your counseling statement, when you counseled your command sergeant major, and I want to say, forget who all battalion commander counsels, I want to say XO and then
the S3, okay, the operations S3
as well. Okay.
And, yeah, the company commanders.
And the company commander. So in his counseling to them, he said, I'm impressed by leaders who always showcase their integrity and unyielding character. Consequences be damned. That's a bold statement. And again, a lot of commanders would say something like that, but you're living it, man. And that's why I have so much respect for you. And that's why I had to interview you. Like, knowing that you had 9 months left till retirement, having already talked to you before, seeing that counseling statement that you had put out, and then also your resignation letter, I was like, God dang, I have to give this dude a platform, because this is like moral courage that, you know, doesn't just, this isn't just something that's applicable to those that are still in the military. And I do hope, I mean, I'm going to send this to a lot of my friends who are still in, sure, but this exists outside of the military as well. The moral courage to choose the harder right over the easier wrong, because what you're talking about here, you know, those that have family, yes, you know, putting yourself in their shoes, I could understand maybe making concessions in order to allow this to continue. But the reality is, and this is a tough one to face, those people, those men and women who are unwilling to stand up and have the courage to do the harder right over the easier wrong, consequences be damned, is quite literally what allows this nonsense to continue. That and blind obedience to authority.
100%. And how far will you take it? Because, so, you know, I did an interview with Dr. Lee Merritt, and one of the questions that she asked me was, hey, do you think that we would ever get to the point where American troops would turn on Americans? And I was glad she asked that question, because I think there are a lot of people who are asking themselves that. So the way I answered it was, hey, I think that's possible. I'm not saying it's likely, but I will tell you this, it's more likely now than it was 3 years ago, you know? And, yeah, and here's the problem. They're always going to give you reasons that sound justifiable. So if you're the type of person who, if you get something that sounds plausible and appears to make sense on the surface, if that's the depth of your courage, you will find a way to justify to yourself whatever it is that you're going to do. And we've seen some crazy things happen with lockdowns, and whether it was in the United States or whether it was in other countries, but I mean, it's not too far-fetched to think that people who hold opposing views could be considered a threat. I mean, it doesn't take that much of a stretch. I am not right now saying that DOD is about to put troops on the streets against Americans. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that if you think that that could never happen, you're wrong. Like, that is naive. And if you think that we're not closer to that being likely than a couple of years ago, just 2 to 3 years ago, you're also not thinking, because we're moving in the wrong direction. And we're moving in a direction where people who will not actually explore the real moral ramifications of what they're doing, that's why we're in this situation, because more people didn't stand up. So let's go back to that counseling statement that you mentioned, right?
Yep.
So if you're in my shoes and you're walking into battalion command and you know, I'm probably on borrowed time. So you've been in a battalion commander's office before, right? They typically have, I mean, it's basically a shrine to oneself.
Yeah.
They have, I mean, I'm not even saying that's bad, right?
No, but that's funny.
you walk in and every ounce of real estate on the walls is a plaque from, you know, whatever, when they were a company commander or, you know, whatever. And I don't think that's necessarily bad. And I'll tell you why people do that. I mean, there are a lot of narcissistic commanders out there, but another reason that people do that that's kind of cool is if you're a junior officer and you come in, it does give you a snapshot of what your battalion commander has done, you know, in, you know, 18 or 19 years in the Army, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but I never even set up my office. I didn't hang a single thing on the wall. I took a couple books in, I put a couple things on my desk, that was it. But part of the reason is because, I mean, I knew I was not going to be in command very long. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, we also moved offices while I was in command. And so by the time I was in the second office, I knew I was not going to be there very long. And so I never hung a single plaque on the wall. My walls were completely bare. So in my mind, it's, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but it's probably not going to be very long. Nobody, because of the situation that I'm in, right? Nobody's going to care about my tactical acumen, you know? Nobody's going to care about the way in which I adjudicate the Uniform Code of Military Justice for disciplinary infractions. And nobody's, I'm not saying that stuff's not important. I'm saying nobody's going to care about the way that I execute those command duties, because once I'm gone, my entire command is going to be reduced down to the shot.
Yeah.
So understanding that, I'm just going to steer into it. And so it doesn't mean that that's the only thing I care about. That's not my point. But I knew that, like, this is going to be the defining story of my command. So how do I find ways for people to realize that, hey, when I tell you I care about the Constitution or laws, regulations, you know, policies, and I care about morality, how do I get people to realize when I tell you this, I'm not just, you know, giving lip service to it?
Yeah.
So this started when I did my first in brief. So I technically wasn't even in command yet. It's probably 2 or 3 days before I actually took command. I met with all the company commanders, the first sergeants, and then my, you know, my staff officers. Hey, this is me. You know, here's a roll up of my career. Here's where I'm from, blah, blah, blah. And then I told them, hey guys, let's just address the elephant in the room. I'm wearing a mask. Why am I wearing a mask? I'm unvaccinated. I don't plan to get it. I am entirely agnostic as to what you do. That's not my place to tell you what to do one way or the other. And remember, this is in June. So this is before the mandate is in effect. Yeah. And I said, I know that you're getting a lot of pressure and your soldiers are getting a lot of pressure from the top about the vaccine. And that's not going to stop. Like, you're still going to get it from the top, but you're not going to get it from me. You know, I'm not going to tell you what to do. Like, you know, that's just the way that it's going to be. And then I told them then, hey, I really care about morality, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was trying to plant seeds, and I don't know exactly who all made the connections, but then in my counseling forms, I went into even greater detail. Like, hey, you know, I care a lot about this, and yeah, consequences be damned. And if people heard me say that and they thought that it was lip service, I hope they made the connection later when I actually was no longer in command. And even if they totally disagreed with me, they still have to say, man, that dude threw down his cards on the table. You know, like, amen. He told us he was going to do that. And then when it came time to do it, he actually did it. Because there were plenty of people in the Army who they were very strongly against the shots until it became mandatory. And then all of a sudden they were no longer against the shots.
Dude, you know? I have so many friends who are in right now who same, literally the exact same thing.
Sure.
And, you know, I will say that I have some other friends who are in, and this is the part about obeying unlawful orders, is that when the news broke that, quote, Pfizer had a vaccine that was fully licensed and approved by the FDA, end quote, how misleading that was. Because I had several friends who were planning on holding out that contacted me, and they were like, dude, my commander told me I had to get it because he showed me an article that Pfizer had an approved vaccine, so I had no other choice. And I was like, dude, that's not true. You actually still did have a choice, because they pulled that bait and switch between community and Pfizer Bio and Tech. How many, you know, people do you know that are service members that succumb to that nonsense? And then how many commanders do you know that propagated that lie? That's, there's no other way to put it. It's a lie.
Yeah, I don't exactly know. But I will tell you that I don't remember exactly when that news broke, but I will tell you that when I was relieved, I was not even aware of that bait and switch. So I was as against the shots, and I don't even like using the term vaccine, but I was as against the injections as you could be when I refused to take it. But even I did not know about the bait and switch with you know, the community.
Yeah.
I would say I found out about that maybe around the beginning of the year. I don't remember exactly when. I've known about it for a long time now, but I did not know about it when I was relieved, and I still was not going to take it. Yeah. And so
good
now,
for you though, because like even not knowing that, you still
100%. So that only makes the case stronger when you know that they are absolutely lying, and that the whole mandate. If I remember the dates correctly, maybe you do, but like the FDA approval, right? The approval, I believe, occurred on August 23rd of 2021. Mm-hmm. And then DOD implemented their mandate one day or 2 days later. But we're talking about August 23rd, August 25th, you know, the end of August 2021. I might be off by a day or two, but whatever. But it was the FDA approval occurs. And then DOD implements their mandate, and the mandate is entirely predicated upon there being an FDA-approved injection.
Yep.
But it was absolutely a bait and switch, like you caught it. It was totally a shell game. The entire thing is based on fraud. So I just didn't know that at the time. That in my mind, it took a couple of months for that to kind of catch on. But now, any commander out there, if you have to understand that, because it's not just you and I saying, it's not you and I casually throwing words around when we say that the mandate is illegal. The mandate is illegal. And it's not just because you and I agree with it. You can think what you want about whether or not it's safe or effective or whatever. Even if you're still naive enough to believe that, the mandate is illegal, and it's entirely predicated on fraud. And the DOD leadership has to know that. There's no way they could not know that. So one of the statements that I put in my my resignation letter, so you know, I had to send a letter up to Human Resources Command saying, hey, I'm resigning. And there's a paragraph in there where you put in why you want to resign. I use some pretty strong language, and I have it
right here. Can I read it?
Yeah, please, because I won't get it exactly right. Yeah.
In my view, continued service would equate to an unspoken endorsement of what I consider to be an act of medical fraud and misconduct perpetrated on military service members. Understanding that the values of senior leaders within the Department of Defense do not align with my own, I consider the best course of action at this time to be resignation.
So here, when I say that, now I'm aware that this thing also includes an element of like fraud, you know? And so I was, I sent that and I was like, well, I mean, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? Say, we're not going to accept your resignation. We're going to fire you instead. I mean, so I wrote that, and I was like, it's just some guys up at HRC that are going to read it. But for me, it's important to say, hey, I don't care that you have fooled everybody else. You're not fooling me. Mm-hmm. My values, if I want to sit here and say that I'm trying to live the Army values, which we quote all the time, there are a lot of 4-star generals in the Army and in the other services as well. That what are you doing? What are you doing?
I think that's what disgusts me the most too, is that, you know, you're a West Point grad as well. How often principles of ethics and morality and, you know, critical thinking, or what I thought was critical thinking, the ability to discern right and wrong, risk benefit analyses. There's sure. So many things that we were taught just at West Point without even considering what we were taught as officers through, you know, professional military education. Even thinking back to my time at Captain's Career Course, which I was in during the beginning of this whole charade, how much these things were instilled into us, and then the behavior of the Department of Defense and the officer corps overwhelmingly is the exact opposite of what was instilled in us. That's what disgusts me the most.
And you know that many of these generals are West Point graduates, or they're Naval Academy graduates, or, you know, I am very happy to have served for, you know, 19 years. I'm very proud of my military service. I am not anti-military. The military is an institution. The military is an institution that is being corrupted by very specific individuals. I do think our military, you know, I got asked a question before on another interview where I got asked, hey, would you go back? And I said, well, I can't give you a definitive yes or no, but I will give you a probably not. And the reason is because I don't know how you clean out the military, because here's what we know. We know that at the very top, they're traitors and criminals. And we know that at every level of command, virtually every commander is a coward, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you clean all that out? I mean, I'm not saying get rid of the institution and wholesale, but there does have to be a massive realignment of priorities. And somehow we have to ask ourselves, okay, even if we got rid of all the people at the top, how do we deal with the fact that our entire command structure, hundreds and hundreds of commanders at every level across, you know, all the services all went along with this? I mean, 99% of them, you know?
You know what's scary that kind of sort of underlines that is the ASH experiment, which was the experiment on conformity. Just a quick share on the results from that. Nearly 75% of the participants in the conformity experiments went along with the rest of the group at least one time. So that was an experiment on conformity. And I'm sure many of the people listening, watching this are familiar with that. But if not, please go look that up. And then another one was the Milgram experiments, which was an experiment conducted to assess obedience. And essentially what Milgram found out was 65% of the subjects continued to inflict shocks. Again, go look at or read the experiment, but essentially 65% of the people were obedient to authority in the face of committing massive amounts of harm. So those two combined with each other, that is what we have in the U.S. Department of Defense right now and in the U.S. government at large. And that is what is extremely scary. And all conversations on authority and voluntarism aside, everyone knows my thoughts on, you know, obedience to authority and how the government is comprised of men and women, and we are just men and women as well. And those conversations aside, it is, within our current structure, scary to think about, or at the least concerning to think about, how overwhelmingly those who are willing to stand up for what is right, to disobey an unlawful order, are being pushed out of positions of authority. And that's 100%. Scary.
So, I mean, let's call it what it is. You know, it's a loyalty test, and you either pass or you don't. And depending on your perspective, I either failed the loyalty test because I don't know, in somebody's mind, I proved that I'm not a member of the team. Right.
Yeah.
And then there are plenty of other people who would say that, no, I actually passed it. Again, it depends on your perspective, but many regimes throughout history have used these different types of loyalty tests. And this goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning with worldview. You know, you got a lot of people running around who do not have an adequate picture of reality. They do not understand how the American government truly operates. They do not understand how the world operates. Mm-hmm. And if you're still operating on a paradigm that is inadequate to allow you to understand reality, you're going to find yourself going through a lot of mental gymnastics, because what you're doing is you're looking at reality and you're trying to understand it, and you don't have a model in your brain that allows you to make sense of what you're seeing, you know? And so you're going to have to, and this is why I mentioned before, you're going to have to go through like that moment where it seems almost like a psychologically existential crisis. You're going to have to go through that. And you're going to have to work through that, and you're going to have to allow yourself to realize, hey, I believe some things that just are not true. And I've got to, recenter myself on something that is more accurate. Mm-hmm. But that's not easy. It's not easy, especially when everyone around you, including a lot of people that you respect, ridicule you for it.
Yeah.
You know? That's going to happen too. Another thing that I'll mention is, so I mentioned before my brigade commander who was, I mean, he didn't go to bat for me. I didn't necessarily think that he would. I mean, he's a coward like all the rest, but I don't say that with any special animosity because he was my boss. I actually rather like the guy, just like I have many close friends who are still in the military. And I would say the same thing to them. You're being a coward, but turn away from what's going on and come, I don't want to say come, you know, come join the right side or whatever, but I mean, but like, hey, we have all done bad things in our lives, and there's still a time where you can still wake up to what's going on and decide to no longer go away with it or go along with it, you know?
Yep.
So when I say about my brigade commander or even the division commander, I say, yeah, they're cowards in the same way that I use that to describe all the commanders right now. I have no special animosity towards them. My brigade commander was super cool. And if I'm being honest, my CG, the CG was actually pretty cool too. So here's what I'll say about the CG, because I have slightly more mixed opinions on him than I do my brigade
commander. CG is commanding general for those who are
unfair. Yeah, good catch. So he's a the division commander, which means he is the commander two levels above the battalion commander, and he is a two-star general. I mean, it is a position of significant responsibility. And in most cases, a division commander is the senior officer on like an entire base. And that is the case at, Fort Campbell. So I only had a couple of one-on-one conversations with the general, but I did have a one-on-one conversation with the general about this. And to his credit, he was super cool with me about it. And I know he was a true believer in the shots, but he was super cool with me. And it was because we had a, shadow program. So all the battalion commanders would do this week-long program with the general where you would shadow him for the week. You go to all the meetings that he does with his staff, et cetera. And the purpose is to allow a battalion commander to see things this week from the general's perspective so that it's easier for you to understand his guidance. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you got to tag along with him for a week, but I can understand the purpose behind it. So, it's August. If I remember correctly, it's right before the mandate is in effect, but this thing is going to drop any day. And I've got to go do the shadow program with a couple other battalion commanders with the general. There are four of us battalion commanders this week. They're going to, you know, tag along with the general. So the day starts, we're going to go do a run with the general. So, all right. So we do it, you know, we do our daily PT, physical training. We go do a run with the general. We come back. Everybody's going to go shower and change. And then some of us are going to have our one-on-one session with the general. I wouldn't exactly say it was an initial counseling, but it was definitely kind of a meet and greet. It's a one-on-one with the general in his office. And I was actually scheduled to do mine on Tuesday, and it got moved to Monday for whatever reason. So we finish our run. There are four of us. Two of us are going to do our one-on-ones right after PT with the general on Monday, the other two on Tuesday. I was initially scheduled for Tuesday. We finished doing our workout on Monday, and they tell me, hey, Lieutenant Colonel Miller, you're actually going to see the general today. And I was like, oh, okay. So whatever it is, he wants to see me today. So there was a worksheet that we had to fill out prior to meeting with the general. And it was a typical worksheet that you can imagine that a battalion commander would fill out right before some sort of meet and greet with the general. And it's, hey, you know, what are your goals? What do you want to do after battalion command? What are your strengths and weaknesses? Where do you see yourself relative to your peers? And then at the bottom, there was this catch-all question that said, hey, what else would you like to discuss with the general? So it was kind of funny because I fill out all these questions and then we get to the bottom, right? And I put something like, in the spirit of transparency, I just want to say that, you know, I'm unvaccinated. I don't plan to get vaccinated. I'm very clear-eyed in my assessment of this, of what this is going to portend for my career, et cetera. So that's probably pretty close to a direct quote as to what I wrote at the bottom of that page. So I go into my meeting with the general, and it's just the general and myself in his office behind closed doors. And we have this, we have a great conversation, but the first half of the conversation is very artificial because he's talking about the first part of the sheet where it's all the stuff that all the other battalion commanders wrote too. What are your strengths and weaknesses? What are your goals in the Army? What do you want to do after battalion command? And so I filled out the sheet as if I thought I was going to be in the Army for a couple more years, but
yeah.
It's like, General, you and I both know that I'm on borrowed time here. So we have this artificial conversation about like, oh, you know, do you want to be a colonel? Do you want to command a brigade, right? And then we get to the bottom and he goes, hey, you know, just so you know, he goes, I read this last night. I'm aware that you wrote this. I didn't want to talk about this first because it would have dominated our conversation. And I appreciated that. And normally I wouldn't readily share a conversation that I had, you know, in private between two individuals, especially, you know, the guy who fired me. But I share this because it actually paints him in a positive light, you know, and I understand these are complex issues. And man to man, commander to commander, behind closed doors, he was cool with me. And the way I came away from this issue was, we were two grown men, both of whom were commanders in the Army. Now he's my boss, mm-hmm. you know, he has the power to fire me. And 2 months later, he would. Yeah. But we're two commanders in the Army, two West Point graduates who are on opposite sides of an issue, but one of us is on the same side of the Army and the other is not.
Yeah.
That's me, by the way. You know, spoiler alert, right? I'm the one not on the side with the Army. But he did his due diligence with me, and I was appreciative of it because I knew what he was doing. So he says to me, I got to make sure you understand what you're walking away from. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, here are your benefits that you could expect if you made it to retirement, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, hey, sir, I appreciate you going through that with me. I understand all that. I acknowledge, does not change my mind. And he's like, okay. So I was appreciative of that conversation. Now, he was super cool.
And you got the sense that he really, truly believed in this thing, right? That he's not somewhat like, I actually am more appreciative of the people who really, truly believe in it, like almost to where they're a fan of it. Despite, yeah. you know,
yeah.
how I much think, they were duped, I appreciate them more than the lukewarm people who are like, you know, I don't really believe in it, but I'm just the, you know, my commander told me I have to. So you guys have to as well.
I think he and the brigade commander truly believed in it. Now, I think that's ridiculous. I think that's super naive, especially now.
Agreed.
But yes, I think he truly believed in it.
It's like the Bible verse, I'd rather you be hot or cold than lukewarm, because if you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out.
Yeah, 100%. So that's the way I came away with it. So this is in August. In September, we deployed to JRTC. So for those who don't know what that is, I mean, Joint Readiness Training Center, but it's this spot in Louisiana that brigades typically deploy to, and they do this entire training rotation for a month. And you do that to prepare yourself to possibly deploy. So we did that in September. So I'm only in command for 4 months, but this deployment to Louisiana for JRTC happens to fall in those 4 months, right? So so we go down there, and JRTC, did you ever do a JRTC rotation when you were?
Thank God, no.
They are horrendously stressful. I mean, like horrendously stressful. So I'm down there as a battalion commander trying to command my battalion, right? And in the back of my mind, now this is in September. So I'm down there from about September 10th to October 6th or 7th. I get pulled out of command at the end of October. So I'm at the end of my command. I don't necessarily know that, but I know that it's coming. So I'm down there in this extremely stressful environment going through this, simulated battles, right? I mean, that's what you're doing. So the general visits, and the general would come around and visit all the battalions, and he comes and visits my battalion, and he's given me some grief about, you know, my battalion that's sending people out to like dig in the defense posture for the infantry battalions, the artillery battalion. He's given me some grief because we're kind of behind where we should be. All the stuff that you would expect a division commander to come and you know, you're always behind at JRTC. I mean, you're always like, oh man, we're not where we need to be, blah, 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 blah. So I'm completely cool with him coming and kind of poking me in the chest and being like, hey, battalion commander, you're behind here. Totally good. My point in sharing that is because he was coming and having a conversation with me that was entirely about what's going on right now in the moment. And he and I spoke for 10 or 15 minutes one-on-one. And we did not speak about the vaccine. That's my point in kind of sharing that story. Yeah. You know, he was poking me in the chest, like, hey, get your battalion in gear. And I say that lightheartedly because that's exactly what he should be doing. All good. And then we finish, and then you know, we deploy back to Fort Campbell, and within 2 weeks, you know, I'm pulled out of command. So, and I'll tell you how this happens, right? Because, I was not relieved in person, and I do take that a little bit personally that you know, I was not relieved in person.
Yeah, you can say it to your face. That's something. Yeah.
So I receive a text on October 22nd in the morning from my brigade commander. Brigade commander sends me a text. Hey, Brad, I've been told I got to suspend you from command. So I'm a little bit surprised that it's happening right now, but I've been expecting that this was going to happen any moment. Mm. And it's a Friday. And I had actually told my sergeant major, hey, I want to speak to all the troops on Friday afternoon before we release them for the day, because this may be like my last time to address everybody. And we would do that twice a month or something, kind of in our Friday formations. I would speak to everybody. So that wasn't unusual. But I had told him a day or two prior, I think I might be pulled out at any moment, so I want to speak to the whole battalion on Friday. So now I get this text Friday morning, and hey, I've been told I got to pull you out, you know, today. So I text him back and I'm like, hey, you know, all good, sir. I was going to speak to the battalion this afternoon. You know, can I still do that? And he said, hey, take care of whatever you got to take care of today. And then, you know, at the end of the day, just, you know, come see me. Okay, cool. Got it. So I speak to my battalion. That's really like the last thing that I did officially. And then I went to go see my brigade commander. So I go into my brigade commander's office, and he's seated at his table with the lawyer. The lawyer's a major, super cool guy. I got nothing against him. And then I walk in, it's just the three of us, super informal, very lighthearted. I mean, you know, notwithstanding the fact that, you know, I'm getting relieved, but
yeah,
we were cool. I mean, we were kind of in there laughing and joking just about the absurdity of the whole thing, you know? So I am suspended of command that day, which means I'm not formally relieved yet, but I am being pulled out. I will be formally relieved. And so in my head, I say, okay, I tell myself, I'm being suspended by the brigade commander because I'll be formally relieved by the general. That's what I tell myself, you know? So I get formally relieved on, this is October 22nd, I get suspended. I get formally relieved on October 28th, but I don't know that until November 15th. So there is a memo signed by the general on October 28th that says, I am relieving you of command effective immediately, 28 October. That is sent to me in an email by the brigade lawyer on November 15th. So 18 days after I've been formally relieved, I get an email from a major. And here's why this is significant, not because I'm all hung up on rank, but remember, I'm a lieutenant colonel who is being relieved of battalion command. I'm being informed of my relief 18 days after the fact by a lawyer, which is a staff officer, not a commander. And he's a major and I'm a lieutenant colonel. So not that I'm hung up on rank, but like, this is not the way that this
no way, happen. No way. It's face to face. And they clearly articulate to you from their perspective. Obviously there's a letter explaining the reasons, but they clearly articulate that to you to add more context and tell you face to face where you messed up and why you're being relieved.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you know, I listen, you can tell me that I disobeyed an order. You can tell me that that's misconduct. Sure, whatever. I don't care. That's fine. But tell me face to face and you know, have the courage to also tell me, hey, I think you're completely wrong on this. I think you are a health risk to your battalion because you're unvaccinated. But I also appreciate your resolve and I appreciate that you were willing to go all the way on this, you know, but I didn't get any of that. That's where I tell you, if I'm telling you the complete picture as to how I feel about my brigade commander and the general, I'm cool with both of them. But when it comes to the general, slightly more mixed opinions, because it's, you should have at least called me into, if I had gotten a DUI, would I have been relieved in person? You know,
100%. He would have ripped you a new asshole if you got a DUI.
So, you know, anyway, it's crazy though, because I also got a letter of reprimand, right? Yeah. And in the letter of reprimand, it basically tells me that I'm the worst officer to ever put on the uniform. It definitely tells me that I am, you know, basically a horrible leader. And then also that I am a readiness risk. And it's just so funny because it's, hey, that, let's just say that document has not aged well.
You know, it has not aged well. And even again, like it's the, all the things that they outlined in that document are the exact opposite. It's literally a projection almost of what they are.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They're calling you, they're telling you you're a horrible officer, you're immoral, you're unethical, or at least alluding to it, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're doing the exact thing that they're projecting onto you, saying that you are.
Yeah, it's really crazy because you know, I realize that a letter of reprimand is probably always going to be strongly worded, but it's just, on the one hand, it's so formulaic because it's probably the same template for a letter of reprimand that, you know, you would get if you were a battalion commander and you did get a DUI, yeah. You know, or whatever you have to do as a battalion commander to get relieved. Because I mean, it's not super common that a battalion commander gets relieved. Mm-hmm. And at this case, whatever somebody thinks about the injection, I understand that the Army is saying, I got to get relieved. I understand that. This is not the general's decision. He's got to do it. But at the end of the day, this is about a difference of medical opinion at the end of the day. You can call it misconduct. You can call it failure to obey an order, whatever. But yeah, I did kind of take it personally that, like, okay, you didn't call me into your office and have a man-to-man, commander-to-commander discussion and say—
Did you ever talk with him again after that at all?
So I saw him. So what do you do with a lieutenant colonel who is a battalion commander once you fire him from command, but he's not out of the Army yet? So I got sent up to the division headquarters. So now I'm on his staff.
Wow.
So I would occasionally see him, and we never had a real conversation. But I mean, he shook my hand once or twice. Hey, Brad, how are you? I mean, nothing more in depth than that. But yeah. I will tell you, there was a curious moment, and if I'm going to give you the entire picture of him, because this maybe potentially paints him in an interesting light, like positively.
Yeah.
So we're in the field, and I'm in his G5 section, so his plan section now. Yeah. And I've just been relieved, and we're in some meeting in our big tent right in the field, and he says, "We're talking about something, right?" And I don't even remember exactly what it is, but we're in there with the whole staff. And he looks over to where me and the G3 are seated. The G3, who's a great guy, you know, had just finished his battalion command and had been chosen as the G3. I happen to be seated behind him. So when the general turns, he's kind of looking at both of us. And so the general says, as he's kind of thinking to himself about something, well, you know, how would the battalion commanders take this? I got a couple former battalion commanders in here, you know, and he looks at the G3 and he's like, what do you think? Meaning, hey, you just came out of battalion command. If we go with this from division, how are the battalion commanders going to take this? You know, the G3 tells him. And then he looks and he's looking at me because I'm seated behind the G3. And he says, hey, Brad, what about you? And I'm completely dumbfounded because it's like he's asking me the question as if I'm a former battalion commander, as in like a guy who went
and did his job well and understand.
Right. You know, the same way the G3 did, who was probably the top battalion commander, which is, I don't know that for sure, but I'm just saying he got picked to be the G3 out of battalion command. He's a top guy, you know? And so that was entirely unintentional. And maybe I'm attributing something to it that I shouldn't. And I was like totally caught off guard that I don't even remember how I answered the question. I probably wasn't prepared to give an answer because I was so caught off guard that he would ask me a question as a guy who had like honorably finished his battalion command. So maybe I'm misreading too much into that, but that was actually kind of a cool moment. And I thought,
well, that makes you think though, right? That like it sort of paints this in a way where you are. It's like saying without saying that, hey, this is all nonsense. Like, like it had nothing to do with your ability to lead. It had nothing to do with your proficiency as an Army officer or your ability to plan or any of those things. It had nothing to do with it whatsoever. In fact, you were very good. It's this BS that I'm adhering to that, you know, whether he agrees with it or not, is the reason that you are being relieved. it sort of paints the letter of reprimand, the Gomar, in a different light, right? Like, sure. It's like, yeah, you're not being reprimanded and you're not being relieved of command because of any of these things. In fact, you're a very good officer. It's because of your unwillingness to be a part of the team.
Sure.
As you keep playing.
You know, and there comes a point where you just got to say to yourself, you know, maybe I don't want to be on this team. And again, yeah, I'm not turning my back on the Army. It's not, I mean, I'm very proud to be an Army officer, you know, a former Army officer. I'm very proud to be a West Pointer. I mean, I learned a lot at West Point. You know, West Point was a great experience for me. I mean, it really was. My problem is, I don't see a whole lot of people putting into practice these things that we learned, that I thought we were supposed to believe this stuff. And again, I want to reiterate, I'm not saying I've had a perfect career. I'm not saying that I was always super perfect guy, number one officer in every unit that I've ever been. No. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying I was a fairly successful officer who made it to battalion command. In the Army, that's considered to be a mark of distinction. It is. Yeah. But I'm not trying to paint myself up to be something that I never was. What I am saying is, in this situation right now, I made a decision that I have never once regretted. When I got pulled out of command, you know, you could say I had mixed emotions, but the number one emotion that I had was like relief. The relief that you feel when you finish a long run or a ruck march and you're like, it's done. It's over with. And what I mean by that is, I had friends, not friends in the Army, but friends that I know back home that I've known forever. And throughout this whole process, as I was still in command, but I knew that I was probably going to come out any moment, they would tell me, oh man, you're such a courageous person, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I would say to them, I haven't done anything yet. Tell me that once I've kind of finished the race, you know? So once I actually got pulled out of command, I did feel this immense sense of relief, because it's like, I did it. Like I actually stuck to my guns, and I didn't get scared at the last moment. You know, I didn't get scared and give in at the last moment, like so many other people did.
Yeah. And then that same moral conviction and courage led up to the resignation. So as we're wrapping up here, talk me through that. You were relieved, and then the resignation.
Sure. So if we're being honest, I mean, once I've been relieved of command, my career is going to go nowhere. Mm-hmm. So now it's just a moment of, do I make it to 20 years or not? So when I got pulled out of command, I was basically at 18 and a half years, right? And now I'm working on the division staff as kind of as a pariah. Everyone was cool with me, but I am the guy who just got relieved from battalion command, you know?
Yeah.
And there were people who would come to me occasionally and say, hey, I really respect, you know, what you did. Okay.
Wow.
Cool. So, you know, I get pulled out at the end of October. January 31st is when this directive is published that says July 1st, you got to be vaccinated or you're gone. And so they did allow for, you know, you can resign in lieu of separation. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm just going to resign. I think it's morally the stronger position. Yeah. They're kind of backing me into a corner for sure. I mean, there's some of that. And I thought, you know, I don't know what it will mean to resign, because if all this somehow gets corrected at some point later on, I realize that I may make it harder to receive some compensation in the end because I walked away. Rather than forcing
the decision to walk
yeah, on. You know, I walked away rather than forcing them to fire me, you know, and a lot of times they tell you that if you want to legally protect yourself, force them to fire you. Mm-hmm. I got all that. And I'm not begrudging anybody who chose to go that route. I think there's some validity in that. But for me, the morally stronger position was, I'm walking away.
It was kind of taking a hard stance, like, not only am I not going to adhere to this nonsense, I'm showing you, and I'm showing those who have eyes to see and those who are willing to pay attention, that I am taking a hard stance against this, that I will, you know, show the world that this is completely wrong. This is not the moral position to take. This is unlawful. This is unethical. This is This doesn't make sense medically. This doesn't hold water when it comes to individual or unit level risk benefit analyses. It has nothing to do with health.
Nothing. And that's why, you know, that's why I wrote that pretty strong language that you read earlier that I summed up with, hey, look at the situation that I'm in. My values don't align with those of the senior leaders of DOD because I do think they're criminals. Yeah. I do think they're engaged in treason. And what am I going to do? I got to leave. Because here's the dirty little secret. And you know this. When you're in uniform, when you're in the military, everyone wants you to believe that you serve your country. That's not exactly true. You serve the government. You serve the government. And so you only serve the country in as much as the government serves the country. So in a functioning society where everything operates the way that it should, no problem, because your government exists, you know, predicated upon certain ideals and actually, you know, preserves the functions that it's designed.
So essentially, it's designed to, if it's operating justifiably, to preserve the rights of men and women and to ensure that we're not imposing our will upon each other. That's it.
Right. You know, and I'm all, I believe in national defense. I mean, I think the world's more complicated than people want to, you know, make it out to be, but I do believe in things like that. So I'm not against the army or anything like that, but it goes back to what I said before. But if you put the two in tension, then I mean, I got to choose the country over the army, because right now in 2022, I believe that the military is actually working against the country. And I think that at top levels of DOD, and it's not just DOD. I mean, it's the whole of government working against the kind of the apparatus around which our country should be built. But but our leaders in DOD 100% know that. I mean, they have to, you know, they know exactly what they're doing. And I'm not going to be a part of it. And as long as I'm in uniform, they have a hold on you. You know, when you're still in uniform. I can resign, I can take off the uniform, and in some ways, I can do a lot more good out of uniform than in uniform. It should not necessarily be like that. Doesn't matter. It is like that, you know?
And man, I commend you on your willingness to stand up, and it takes balls. It goes without saying, it takes balls to stand to your moral conviction and, again, to choose the harder right over the easier wrong. Like you said, a lot of people give lip service and will say that. All West Pointers are taught that. It's in the cadet prayer. We read it all the time. It's plebe knowledge, I believe. And so few actually, you know, adhere to that in any form. And man, like, thank you for being you, for doing that, for actually showing a high level of moral conviction, for doing all those things that we've talked about on this episode that we're taught as Army officers and West Point cadets. And I hope, if anything, that other service members or people in various institutions who are adhering to all these corrupt agendas watch this and muster up the courage to take the same stance. Because I guarantee you that there's still so many people across various industries who are sitting on that fence, who are unsure of, again, whether they obey their master or they adhere to their morals.
Sure.
And this, examples like this, really help people, you know, lean towards the direction of adhering to their morals and doing what's right.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that, you know, and I appreciate the stance you've made, and, you know, and what I really hope happens. There are a lot of people who are never going to wake up, you know, but there are others that are starting to come to the realization that things are really wrong, and some of them are still good people. And those are kind of the ones that I hope will realize that, hey, just because you were wrong up to this point doesn't mean you have to continue to be wrong. You know?
Amen. Yeah, you and, know. I know I'm going to send this to a lot of my friends that are in the military still. So hopefully this will help them.
And here's the thing. And this last thing, right? Is if you hear this conversation that you and I have just had over the last hour and a half and you get pissed, are you really pissed at us? Or are you pissed at the greater situation that we're all in? Hey, don't get pissed at me, because I'm telling you that things are really bad, if things are indeed really bad. And I don't think all hope is lost, but I do think things I think things are worse than a lot of people want to admit, you know?
Yep. Yep. And it takes people like you, going back to what we said, for those who are on that fence, that proverbial fence, it takes a willingness to stand up and do the right thing for all this nonsense to stop. That's literally what it takes for those who continue to turn a blind eye, you know, behave in a lukewarm manner. That's what allows this stuff to continue. So for those watching, hopefully you can be inspired by Brad. Maybe he'll do an inspirational speaking circuit after this. Maybe that's what this episode will inspire him to do. He's inspired the hell out of me. So thank you, brother. Thank you.
For thanks, man. Brad.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Way Forward Podcast. If you like this episode, please be sure to subscribe, but also be sure to tell a friend, a loved one, a family member, a coworker, a fellow tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist, your neighbor who thinks you're absolutely crazy, whoever you think could benefit from hearing this stuff, please share this episode with them. Also, if you have a freedom-oriented or holistic health business that you operate or one that you know of, please be sure to send them our directory form. You can find that in the show notes. And also, if you like this episode, you will love our membership platform we just launched. You can also find that in the show notes or head to thewayforward.com. And again, forward is spelled F-W-R-D, thewayforward.com. Thanks. Love you guys.